We have come a long way. And when you start moving, hip-hop is the most powerful movement in the world. It's in Japan, it's in Africa, it's in the Caribbean, it's in Europe. And when it becomes the political power that it can be, we are gonna rock this nation. We're gonna rock this nation. And let me tell you, in New York City, we are the new majority. 65% of New York City is people of color. It is time for us to take control over New York City. A lot of people said, well, why should you vote? You know, I'm not even talking about whether you should vote for a Democrat or a Republican or Kerry or Bush. You know what I think? I think we should fight for a new column in electoral politics called None of the Above. None of the Above. They should have Bush, Kerry, and None of the Above. And if None of the Above wins, let's do it all over until we get the right candidate. So I'm pushing for None of the Above. And in this race, I'm certain None of the Above would win. But we have to realize this too. We got to go back to our communities. And what we should do is not let people scare us into voting for one over the other. We don't want to vote for evil anymore, lesser or more. We don't want to vote for evil anymore. But what we should do, instead of talking about Bush right now, and yes, he's got to go, but the Democrats are having a convention in July, and unless they embrace the hip-hop national agenda, then we should hold our vote until they embrace your agenda. Embrace your agenda. Embrace your agenda. We're tired of talking about, Kerry's talking about state of course, free trade instead of fair trade. Tired of talking to them about reparations is divisive. Affirmative action don't end and mend it. We're tired of that kind of talk. This is what's coming out of the Democratic Party. Tired of them saying that we want to build more prisons and less schools. We're tired of that kind of talk. So we should tell them, unless you pay us our reparations, unless you for immigrants coming in and getting their citizenship like everybody else. When the whites, immigrants came, they got their citizenship. When people of color crossed the border, give them their citizenship too. Give them their citizenship too. And unless they're talking about freeing our political prisoners, let's hold our vote. Don't let anybody come before you. And remember this, electoral politics is just
remember
a tactic.
Remember this, electoral politics is just a tactic.
It's not a panacea. It's not gonna bring us to the promised land. But don't let nobody tell you it doesn't matter. Some people come up and say, well, it doesn't matter. I'm not voting, I'm not getting into that. But let me tell you something. The air you breathe, whether it's gonna be polluted because of environmental racism and put an incinerator or a sewage plant in your district, it is a political decision. Whether they're gonna pick your garbage up once a week or twice a week is a political decision. Whether they close your daycare centers, close your after school programs, don't hire your children with your money is a political decision. And unless you're gonna go and bust out them brothers and sisters out of jail with your weapons, which you're not gonna do, it's gonna be a political decision. And unless you decide to stick up the American treasury and say, give me my reparations, which you're not gonna do, it's gonna be a political decision. So let's take over American politics, bring back power to the people, and let them know that New York, Chicago, Florida, Pennsylvania, Minnesota, Ohio, DC, California belongs to us. Power to the people.
It's 94.1 Hard Knock Radio. Davey D hanging out with you this afternoon. We are broadcasting from the National Political Hip Hop Convention. I'm going to be joined by Anita. She's out there on the convention floor, and there's a whole lot of things going on. But in front of me is somebody who I like, definitely somebody who I want to see become the mayor of New York City. That's my original hometown, for folks who don't know. His name is Mr. Charles Barron. How you doing, sir?
Well, thank you so much. I'm doing great, and I appreciate you giving me this opportunity.
Man, you know, I New York politics, you know, what do you have, like 75, 250, seems like city council people. Yeah. So you got to really be somebody who's strong.
Oh, yeah, man.
And you got to have a loud voice in order to cut through.
That's right.
And stand out.
That's
and
right.
Over the years, you've been one of those people. So maybe you can give folks who are listening a little bit about your background.
Sure.
And why it would be important for you to be mayor of New York. And also why you're here at the convention.
Exactly. First of all, let me just say I'm a child of the 60s. I came out of the Black Panther movement. I was in the Black Panther Party, the Harlem branch of the Black Panther Party in the 60s. And after that, I joined the Black United Front under the leadership of Reverend Herbert Daughtry.
I remember him.
And we dealt with every issue you can think of, the Michael
Youssef
Stewart
Hawkins.
Killing, Youssef, you got it.
Mm-hmm.
All the police brutality, anti-apartheid stuff. So in that transition from movement to government, every time we go to battle around an issue, we always run into some Uncle Tom, ain't your mama, sellout Negro politicians that block us. Mm-hmm. And we got to demonstrate, and we holler and scream, and they just continue to block us.
How do they get in a position to block us?
Because they got power. See, we decided that the system, we want no part of it. In the 60s, we wanted to tear it down. I was a revolutionary nationalist, still am. And that's why sometimes I say, ex-Black Panther, Councilman Charles Barron, do you have problems with that? And I said, yes, take off the X. I'm still a Panther to my heart.
Mm.
But we were talking about changing the system, so we didn't want a whole lot of being a part of it. And
right.
It was, and some of us felt it was a contradiction to try to get in something you saying that you need to radically change or tear down.
Right.
But the Black Panther Party ran Eldridge Cleaver for president on the Peace and Freedom Party. They ran Huey Newton for Congress while he was in prison.
Right.
And they ran Elaine Brown for the Assembly, and Bobby Seale ran for the mayor of Oakland.
Right.
So we you know, this is a struggle for power. There's two ways that you get change. One, you can continue to try to influence. Influence is when you march, demonstrate, mobilize, organize to try to get people in power to make decisions in your best interest.
Right.
Power is when you have that position to make it yourself.
Right.
So I got to the point where I said, this is not making any sense. I'm tired of calling people names. I'm tired of talking trash. You know, we need some power.
Right.
So in East New York, Brooklyn, where I come from, I said, I'm running for this city council seat. That's a
now,
powerful
seat. Now, East New York
is
next to Bed-Stuy.
Right.
And next to
Brownsville.
Those are the two huge
historically
black neighborhoods.
Exactly.
And Bed-Stuy is bigger than Harlem.
Bed-Stuy is huge.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know
that. A lot of black folk. Brooklyn, you got more black people in Brooklyn probably than anywhere in the world.
Yes.
So it's a lot of black folk there. So I said, what revolutionaries need to do is to get into electoral politics. Instead of worrying about politics corrupting you, why can't you be a cleansing agent? Why can't you get involved and still be you? They say, well, Charles, if you get in there, you know, they're going to change you. You can't do this. You can't do that. Well, I wanted to challenge my revolutionary friends and say, look, I'm going to get in, and I'm going to be as revolutionary as I was when I was not in. And that's what I attempted to do. So I ran on a platform of freeing political prisoners, reparations, all the stuff that we're talking about here in this hip-hop
convention.
So you
ran on reparations?
I ran on reparations. And then after I won and got in, I had the first hearing in the history of New York City on my reparations resolution, the Queen
right.
Mother Moore reparations resolution in the city council. I had another resolution on freeing political prisoners. Of course, I got beat up by the New York press,
right.
But that's all right. Those things happen. Everything's
so
political.
How do you manage to do two things? And also Anita's joining us. She's walking in the room from the convention floor. But there's two things that seem to happen. When you're in political life, you know, having gone to the Democratic conventions and all that, it's real easy to be isolated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they make it very comfortable for you just to hang out with other people who are in elected office, and to the point that the folks who put you there can almost become a distant memory.
Good
you know,
point.
And while you're there, you got all the perks. well, you know, Charles, councilman, if you pass this bill, kids can go to school. We can do this, all these different things. So how do you keep from having a relentless system from corrupting you when you know there's all the perks and when you know that there's a tendency just to isolate you anyway?
Right. See, the greatest challenge I had was that. The way I came in made it a little easier for me because the whole Democratic Party machine was against me.
Okay.
The congressman out there, the assemblyman, the county leader of Brooklyn, the former council person, all of the district leaders. I had no political politician supporting me at all.
Okay, so they weren't trying to hang out with you.
Hello. So right. I didn't owe nobody nothing because nobody did anything to get me in here but grassroots people. I took it to the hood. I went to the projects. I went to the beauty salons, the barbershops. I went to brothers and sisters on social services. I went to the brothers in the gangs. I went to the CUNY students. So I built a whole new constituency. So I came in free. So
okay.
I don't owe anybody nothing. I don't hang out with them. I don't go to their conventions. They don't put my petitions together to get me put on the ballot. I reject that. I put myself on the ballot with my movement. So I don't give them the $1,000. When you get in, you give them $1,000 and you can stay home and they collect all your signatures to get on the ballot. I don't do that.
You don't do so.
We collect our own signatures.
So you got
I
your
raise
own
my
thing.
Own money. They don't raise money for me. So I don't answer to anybody but my people, my God, my family, and myself.
Okay.
Well, and that seems to be a lot of pressure on one person. Like, what about connecting it and taking it out of individualized aspects of just one person acting alone and bringing more of that collective a sense of understanding? One thing that I've noticed throughout this convention is that people are looking at a way of transitioning the way we identify and select our leadership and also bring about a level of accountability. So it's also connected to community. So you don't have to be that lone soldier out there doing the more positive work, you know, coming against in contact
Boy,
with this all this crazy.
We could hook that up, man. That would be awesome.
How would we go about doing
you
that?
You know what we got to do? And I always tell people, we can't subscribe to this single leadership concept, this egocentric, charismatic, authoritative type leader, one at a time. Sharpton's replacing Jesse. You know, like we only have one at a time.
Right.
Whites can have a whole bunch of leaders. But when it comes to us, oh, you taking someone's place? When Sharpton ran for president, they said, oh, because I was out on police brutality issues. Are you taking Sharpton's place?
Charles Barron, the new Al Sharpton.
Right, right. That's what that's what they would say. That's a plea. First of all, I don't have a do. Different kind of head top here.
Right.
No, we ain't taking anybody's places. We have many leaders. And we got to look at leadership and not leader. When you want to build a fan club, then look for followers. When you want to build a movement, you look for a collective leadership, a collection of leaders. So I don't look for followers. I don't want nobody following me. I'm looking for leaders. I want people to join in leadership. The way we hold people accountable, our folk got to hold people to an agenda. So it doesn't matter how good I rap or how, you know, a person can come and, you know, how we can offend, get our people riled up. You watch the speeches and stuff, you know. You better watch a person's history. What have they done historically? And what is their positions on the policies? And we have to build a progressive, revolutionary political movement that says, bring the candidates before our movement. And if they adhere to our agenda, that's why I'm here at this hip-hop summit, that an agenda was put together. And we need to say, I don't care if it's Charles Barron or whoever it is, you come, you have to check out and adhere to this agenda to get our support. And you don't do that, you don't have our support. We're not raising money. We're not voting for you.
Right.
And then I think people in the hip-hop movement should run people for office. So you don't have to worry about Charles Barron being accountable. You know, like I respond to that in a very rough way in the community, probably too rough when people say, I'm going to hold you accountable. Listen, I've been out here for 30 years, you know, an activist organizing for stuff to help you and didn't even know your name. So you cannot hold me accountable. I'm holding you accountable for voting for me to get you out to be more involved. Because to me, electoral politics is a tactic. It's not a panacea. It's not an end all. Got to build that movement to hold accountability.
You know, one of the things I wanted to find out, under Rudolph Giuliani, who they're now saying may be on the vice presidential ticket for the Republican Party, which puts him, you know, a breath away from being the president. What was it like working under him? How did you deal with him? And what were some of the types of tactics that he would use against, you know, somebody who would be outspoken? You bring in reparations, and you got a guy like Giuliani in office.
Oh, man, he'll punish you. See, what happens, a lot of politicians get afraid to come up with stuff because they'll punish you.
Like, well, how's that punishment show
this
up?
This is how it happens. You want $2, $3 million to fix up your park in your neighborhood? That's in the capital budget. The speaker doesn't like you. The mayor doesn't like you. You're not getting that $3 million. You want to fix your libraries up in your community? You're not getting it. You want extra money to give out program money in your community? You will not get it. They will punish you. So then, if I'm talking all of this stuff, say, yeah, Charles is deep. He's talking all that black stuff. But we ain't getting nothing for the neighborhood. We need to get him out of here. And they'll make sure that your neighborhood deteriorates. Fortunately for me, I came in right after Giuliani left.
Okay.
And when the new speaker came in, I think the wisest thing I did, I started a group called the Fresh Democracy Council. We had term limits in New York City. And of the 51 council members in New York City, 38 were new because of term limits. I got together with 25 of them before I got in, and we hooked up an agenda for democracy in the city council so that we wouldn't be punished too badly by the speaker.
Okay.
So when I got in, I already had me some relationships. I bonded with some of them. So the speaker knows that he needs us to pass the budget to make land use issues. And if I can get some of my colleagues not to vote on certain things, and he saw that they weren't isolating me, the blacker I talk, because I came in there talking stuff, and you know, the pictures were on the wall. So why do you have all them white men up on the wall? That was the first issue. I said, I can't legislate in this place with all these white men up on the wall. Half of them had us a slavery. Thomas Jefferson's a slaveholding pedophile. That's how I came in.
Hmm.
And then reparations and political prisoners. So they thought they were going to isolate me. But then at the same time, I brought Robert Mugabe from Zimbabwe to City Hall. The first time an African leader been in City Hall, and a controversial one in their mind, because he's taking lands from whites in South Africa and Zimbabwe and giving it back to his people. Man, they called me everything but a child of God. The speaker went around and told all the council members, don't go to Charles Barron's reception. I don't want y'all to go. 18 of them came.
So he was saying that,
yes,
that bold.
Yes,
wow.
I mean, me and him, we went at it. You know, he said, Charles, why you got to do this to me? Do what to you? Why you bringing Mugabe here? I don't bring my politics to you. I said, this is not your spot. City Hall belongs to the people. The Red Room, which is the most prestigious room in City Hall, that's our room. Am I doing nothing to you? I ain't even thinking about you. That's my leader. That's who I respect. And if you can go to Israel and don't even meet with the Palestinians, don't tell me nothing about any African leader I want to meet with. You do your thing. I'm doing my thing. This is City Hall. It belongs to the people. You don't own anything. That's the battling we had. Then the media tried to get my colleagues to criticize me, the New York Times. And they got mad. They wrote an editorial thing against me saying, why is the council so silent on Barron's, you know, bringing Mugabe to City Hall? And they wanted to get my colleagues to beat me up and couldn't find one to even criticize me, not even the conservative ones. Because a mistake we made in the 60s, and we do to some extent now, revolutionary radical people, we scare people away. We scare them away with our personality. You know, we're so militant that we scare our own folk away. And a lot of that happened even in the 60s. So if you could stop scaring your people, you could still be revolutionary and progressive and be nice and not be so, you know, like a lot of people in the hip-hop community don't even want to smile. You know, they got to look mean all the time. And sometimes, you know, you got to be able to let your people know that, hey, I'm tough, I'm mean, but I will crack a smile.
Councilman Barron, you mentioned the whole thing of your history with the Panther Party, and then you mentioned the importance of hip-hoppers running for office. Why do you think that's so important?
You know why? Because nobody will carry your agenda better than you. See, when you have to count on somebody else to carry your agenda, they can dupe you once they get in. Now, I would never do this, but they don't know me. We just meeting each other. Say, hey, this is a good guy, got a nice record and everything. You don't know what's going to happen when I become mayor. I'm going to be all right, and I'll probably do more radical stuff than you even tell me to do. But you don't know that, but you know you.
Well, what is it? You know, what is it about those hip-hoppers? What is it about those activists and organizers that exist within our community? What would make them such the great, what would extend that leadership and making addressing certain issues?
Because they're powerful. See, they're fresh. They still got the fire in their belly. They're creative. They're geniuses. Look at their work. They know how to reach our people. We need more hip-hop politicians, not the traditional stuff that people go along to get along. You know, you get in there, so you're not supposed to do this, you're not supposed to do that. See, they don't want to hear that. And they get in there, it's going to be totally different.
Well, you know, when you say hip-hop politicians, and this is going back to something that Yvonne Buino put in her book, and I think you alluded to, but didn't say directly, was really taking the task of being in this arena very seriously. And, you know, it seems like you came up with a strategy, you know, to protect yourself. You understood the terrain that you're in. And maybe you could explain further, you know, how one has to prepare themselves in the arena of politics so that when people get in, that they know it's more than just sloganeering, which seems like an anticipated tactic that they would use now. Like, just go in there and sing a song. But obviously you got to do more than that.
No, you better know how to organize. You better know how to negotiate. You better know how to bond with people. And you got to realize that some people you may not even like. Some people may against reparations, against your issues. Bond with them, because you got to work with them each and every day. You don't have to like them. You can come out strong politically against them. But if you bond with them.
What do you mean when you say bond?
Meaning, like, say if I see you every day and we're on the opposite side of issues, you know, just how you doing? How's everything? How's the family?
Okay.
You get to know the person, to become personable. See, the difference between being an activist, I don't ever have to see my enemy. Because we out there demonstrating against them. We don't have to live with them. We don't have to rub shoulders with them. The difference, when you get in electoral politics, they're going to be sitting right next to you. The very people that got up and talked against reparations, talked against political prisoners, y'all going to have to work on a budget together. You have to work on legislation together. You see them every day. So, I mean, you can stay with a fixed attitude every day if you want.
And you don't want to come in there with a sledgehammer and go upside their head?
Go ahead. Sledge them. Go ahead and hit them upside the head. And after their head is busted, you still ain't getting nothing. I mean, you can bust them upside the head. I do. Mm-hmm. And see, you can still do the sledgehammer, but do it politically. Mm-hmm. You can still hit them. You know, there's no larger critic of all of them in the city council than I. Mm-hmm. I beat them good. But you do it in a way that you don't destroy the relationship. You destroy them on that issue.
Okay.
You separate the politic from the person. Now, some of them are just no good people, and then you can sledgehammer all the way, bust them up, and don't worry about it. But there's a time where you say, I'm going to beat him down badly, because believe it or not, we're sharper than most of them. So if you know how to be passionate and not emotional, see, emotionalism makes you narrow. When you're passionate, you can still be sharp, political, piercing. You know, you can be a Muhammad Ali of politics.
Mm.
But he was charming. They liked him. People that didn't like him, didn't think they would like him, he charmed them.
He would smile as he beat you.
But he still beat your butt. He still kicked your behind in that ring.
Right.
Once you got in that ring, he beat you down. Afterwards, he was still like, hey, you're a nice guy. You know, you can do that.
What about the whole thing of playing with the issues of politics? Last night, Slick Rick at the Hip Hop Political Convention Forum, he mentioned that Kerry and Bush, lesser of two evils, and voting is a waste of time. What do you say?
Voting is not a waste of time. Kerry and Bush is two evils, and we shouldn't be voting for any evil. I agree with Slick Rick there. But when you get on a local level, forget the national scene for a second. Everything in your life is political. Whether your garbage is going to get picked up once a week or twice a week is a political decision. Whether the air that your children are going to breathe in your neighborhood is polluted because of incinerators and bus depots and waste transfer stations, environmental racism coming to your community, is a political decision. You talking about reparations, the Slick Rip for reparations? What is he going to do? Is he going to go to the Treasury Department and take it for us? Mm-hmm. Or it's either going to come through some legislation or litigation. So Slick Rick has to come with a solution. That's a nice rap. But how do you address this agenda that we have here? We have a broad agenda, universal health care, education. So Slick Rick says don't vote. Slick Rick said, you know, like, lesser two evils. What does he want us to do? We can't rap our way out of this. So what does he want us to do? How does he keep daycare centers open? How does he make sure that we build more schools than prisons? You know, how does he make sure we bring the boys home from Iraq? How does he make sure that 50% of the black males that are unemployed in New York City get a job? I went to the city council and got $30 million put into a unemployment program for our people. What's Slick Rick going to do, give up the $30 million? You know, you know, that's a nice rap, but we want solutions. I'm sick of rap. I want some solutions.
That's the voice of Charles Barron. He is city council in New York City. He's running for mayor. He's here at the National Hip Hop Political Convention. And, man, you've been dropping a lot of gems on us, and I appreciate that. Before we let you go, you know, Anita had brought up, you know, Kerry and Bush and all that. Two questions. One, if Giuliani becomes, if he's on the vice presidential ticket, what do we need to look out for? And the second thing is, who do we vote if you think Kerry is evil and Bush is evil?
This is what I suggest we do right now. This is the game that they play with us. There is a convention, a Democratic convention in July. I say hold your vote. Hold your commitment until after that convention. Don't let them even talk to us about Bush. Don't let them use Bush. We got to stop Bush or vote for Kerry. No, we got to start Kerry, not stop Bush. And their convention is in July. We got to say, I don't care what our black leaders say. They could have endorsed whoever they want already. Until the Democratic Party shift from the right of center, get away from free trade and go to fair trade, are strong on affirmative action and reparations, until they address our black agenda to build up the urban community, then we are holding our vote. I'm not telling you not to vote. Hold it until you get a commitment. And then we should make a decision after the convention.
Okay.
Because it's not about Bush and Kerry. It's about Kerry right now.
Okay.
And the Democrats not taking us for granted, playing boogeyman politics. We got to stop Bush. We got to stop Giuliani. No, we got to start Kerry and the Democrats being committed to this hip-hop agenda and our progressive agenda in this nation.
Do we look for a third party?
In the process of doing the two-party voting in November, we should build a third party so that we have an alternative. And then I think, I know this will never happen, but they should have a column, none of the above. And we should be able to vote for none of the above. And if none of the above beats the two candidates, then let's do it all over again until we get the right candidates.
I like that one.
None of the above.
So there you have it. Charles Barron, not ex-Panther, Black Panther.
That's
freedom
right.
Fighter, running for the mayor of New York. He's here at the National Political Convention. I'm going to let you get back to the floor. And we want to thank you. And Anita went back out on the floor. We saw M1 from Dead Prez roll up in here. So we're going to try and get him. I think Chuck D is out here. And there's a lot of people coming through this afternoon.
Sir.
And it's a beautiful thing. So once again, Charles Barron, thank you very much. And we'll be talking to you soon.
Thanks for having me. Historic occasion.
Anything that people in the Bay Area can do to help you run for mayor?
Send me some money.
Is there
take contributions? Yep, it's right on that card there. They can send it to the post office.
CharlesBarron2005.com.
Right.
Okay, there you go.
Thank you very much.
Peace.
I don't usually deal with those big words because I don't usually deal with big people.
Cannibal walk the earth to get ill, blood spill. Eyes sunk deep and they scarlet bone chill. Fuel for survival, most for the thrill. Terrorism is the war of the poor. Hold up a mirror so the script get flipped. Cause when it's in reverse, it ain't wrong no more. Cause warfare, the terrorism of the rich. Who's a true gorilla when the powder's on your body? Killing innocent civilians, but a life is a life and a killer is a killer. You had a test chillin', push a button, kill a million. See the anguish of the parents when they're carrying the body of a baby that they cherish. When innocent people perish, it's a very thin line between a soldier and a terrorist. Murder, murder, kill, kill, kill. Death and destruction, a gap get filled. Armor heal, destroy your rebuild. Shots still ring out and blood still spill. Murder, murder, kill, kill, kill. Death and destruction, a gap get filled. Armor heal, destroy your rebuild. Shots still. Give you an example what our troops are coming back to. Cold cities where the youth are getting strangled, the community in peril and our future looking narrow. Your school already failed you, the boys in blue nail you, they salute you with the barrel. The streets are a certified dead zone, decorated with chalk lines and headstones. All the way live and every night the bullets flying, even if you ain't
you and they locked you in the obstacle course where nothing's possible. If you slip up and they caught you, they got boxes where they lock you, make $1 million off you. They rule you too rude to school, they screw you in a booth, shoot electricity through you. Or inject death into you on a television set and just let it ooze through you. Every time a leader try to stand up for freedom, someone grab them with the heater, they brain it back.